one day, a group of scientists got together, physicists and biochemists, astronomers and geneticists, neuroscientists and chemists, and, well, you get the idea, there were a lot of scientists, and they came to the conclusion that humanity had come a long way and really no longer needed God. So they elected one scientist to go and tell God that they were done with him. The scientist walked up to God and said, "God, we've decided that we no longer need you. We're to the point where we can clone people and do many miraculous things, so we don't really need you anymore. And how about if you just go wherever it is you go, mind your own business, and leave us alone from here on out?" So all the while, God is listening very patiently and kindly to the man. And after the scientist was done talking, God said, "Very well, how about this? Let's say we have a contest to see who can make a human being." To which the scientist replied, "Okay, we can handle that." But God added, "We're going to do it just like I did back in the old days with Adam." The scientist said, "Sure, no problem," and bent down and grabbed himself a handful of dirt. And that's when God looked at him and said, "Get your own dirt." As Carl Sagan said in The Cosmos, to really make an apple pie from scratch, you must begin by inventing the universe. We're eavesdropping on another conversation in today's Old Testament. This time, it's a conversation between Job and God. In the book of Job, Job is a stand-in for the suffering of all of humanity. And in response, God speaks to Job about the miracles of creation, of God's hand molding the universe, which is why we selected the image on the front of the cover of the bulletin today. But before we listen in on their conversation, let's set the stage for today's conversation. We may remember that Job had it all: wealth, acres and acres of land, thousands of head of livestock, a loving spouse, and 10 children. He worshiped in the temple regularly and was highly regarded as a leader in his community. So for all intents and purposes, Job lived the good life. And then one day, Satan, who'd been spending a lot of time on earth walking around with humanity, and who believed that Job was faithful and blessed simply because God protected him from suffering, so Satan made a deal with God. God would take away all that Job had, and then, according to Satan at least, in the midst of all of his suffering, Job would turn from God and curse God to his face. Well, God doesn't believe that Job is going to respond this way, so God arranges for Job to indeed lose his wealth, his children, his land, his livestock, his servants, his health, his standing in the community. And Job suffers unbearable losses, is comforted by three clueless friends, and even his wife wishes him dead. So there are several messages for us this morning. The first takeaway being that Job is intended to be a stand-in for you and for me, for all of humanity. He is our representative in this conversation with God, and he brings to God's attention all of the suffering of humanity, and he demands an answer. Because sometimes, Job, and to be honest, you and me too, sometimes we aren't quite sure that God sees the suffering in the world. And just like the scientist in our opening story, somebody is elected to go to God and to tell him what's going on down here on earth, and that's Job. In Job 7, 1-3, Job says, "Do not human beings have a hard service on earth? And are not their days like the days of a laborer? Like a slave who longs for the shadow, and like laborers who look for their wages, so I am allotted months of emptiness, and nights of misery are apportioned to me." He speaks our truth to God, bringing all of our anguish and complaints and bitterness straight to him. Job is indeed a role model for you and me in his honesty and faith and candor with God. But through all of this suffering, Job indeed doesn't curse God. He keeps his faith in the Almighty. From Job 18 to 25, "For I know that my Redeemer lives, and that at the last he will stand upon the earth. And after my skin has been thus destroyed, then in my flesh I shall see God, whom I shall see on my side, and my eyes shall behold and not another." We say this passage during the opening of our funeral services. Like Job, may we bring to God the suffering of 9 million Syrian refugees fleeing civil war in the land of their birth, leaving their homes with only the clothes on their back or a small backpack filled with their belongings. Seeking freedom and life, refugees are risking everything on a raft in the treacherous waters of the Mediterranean. So Job indicts God for the suffering of humanity. So how does God respond? What does God do? Does God respond legalistically? Does he minimize or dismiss Job's suffering? Instead, God speaks to him out of a whirlwind. "Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Have you commanded the morning since your days began and caused the dawn to know its place? Can you bind the chains of the Pleiades or loose the cords of Orion? Do you know the ordinances of the heavens? Can you establish their rule on earth? Who has the wisdom to number the clouds, or who can tilt the waterskins of the heavens when the dust runs into a mass and the clods cling together? Do you know when the mountain goats give birth? Do you observe the calving of the deer? Do you give the horse its might? Do you clothe its neck with mane? Is it by your wisdom that the hawk soars and spreads its wings toward the south? Is it at your command that the eagle mounts up and makes its nest on high?" So as an aside, the poetry in God's response to Job is so full of beauty. And if you're like me and you feel God's nearness in nature, I encourage you to read Job chapters 39 and 40, for they contain amazingly evocative language of all of creation. So God doesn't discount Job's petitions or respond defensively or punish Job. Instead, God speaks of the extraordinary might of God's power which created the universe. Job shares with God the suffering of humanity, and God speaks to Job of the beauty in creation. And some might see these as irreconcilable. But David R. Henson writes, "I'm not sure these are competing views. I don't think the one negates the other. God doesn't respond with beauty to cancel out or disregard Job's suffering. I think that's why God doesn't exactly answer Job's question about suffering. Because no answer, even one from God, is ever satisfactory in the midst of our pain and grief. Nothing solves suffering. Nothing answers it. But neither is suffering and grief the whole story of our lives and the world. There is beauty and grace and hope in the world, existing simultaneously in paradox, side by side." Which brings me to our second takeaway for this morning. Henson continues, "I think they need each other in this story to learn from the wisdom and experience each offers to the other. God needs to see Job's prophetic grief, and Job needs to see God's prophetic beauty. If all we experience is prophetic grief like Job, we can spiral into despair, paralyzed by the overwhelming nature of the earth's suffering. But if all we see is prophetic beauty, We can spiral into lofty ideals and become so detached from the reality of human pain that we become just as paralyzed. The complexity of the Syrian refugee crisis has the potential to paralyze governments and officials from around the world from forming a response. This crisis is so complicated that some have and will turn away from the suffering and deaths of men, women, and children. But I thank God, for there are people who are responding with compassion to the Syrian refugees, going so far as to go out on the dangerous waters of the Mediterranean to bring the refugees to places of safety, offering them shelter, giving them food and clothing. People of all faiths are working together to help through worldwide organizations like We Welcome Refugees or Lutheran Social Services right here in Michigan. So a few weeks ago, I saw a photo of a little boy, only 4 years old, who drowned while trying to cross those dangerous waters in a vessel that was not seaworthy, his little body lying on the sand of a beach in Turkey. My brothers and sisters in Christ, in that moment, my heart broke open for the depth of a suffering I will never know. A father losing everything, his home, his wife, and his sons. So after praying about that for a long, long time, I invited Bill Davenport and others to help St. Michael's find real ways to respond to this crisis. With hope and wisdom and a passion for sharing our abundance with those who have lost everything, we have begun the Refugee Project, a ministry of hope for refugees. It is yet early days in the planning of what our response may look like, but we have decided to hold a prayer vigil and ask for donations of kitchen and bathroom supplies at this year's Thanksgiving Eve service to be given to Lutheran Social Services. We've registered with the worldwide We Welcome Refugees Project and with Lutheran Social Services, who we've also invited to come and speak to us about the crisis. And we're waiting to hear from them on future details of how and what we might exactly do in support. And we will share those details with you as soon as we have them. And if you'd like to be part of this working team, this refugee project, please see me after worship. Our relationship to God, like Job's, is dynamic, ever-changing and ever-new. We are called to speak our truth in all our suffering to God. And in response, God promises to be with us, fully present and calling us to co-create a world of peace and plenty for all of God's creation. But by the time the book ends, Hansen writes, things have changed. The divine courtroom where God and Satan wagered has been replaced by an earthly one, where Job and God argue. And the picture we see of God is not a removed being, but of a God who is intimately involved in and present in every corner of the earth, from the most insignificant creatures to the most massive ones. God has become integrated with creation before Job's very eyes. May we, like Job, come to see God with our very eyes, and in so doing, see the divine in one another. For our help is in the name of the Lord who made heaven and earth. And may all God's people say,